Myself and my colleagues found how type questions also evolved into the what type of question regarding what kind of people would do this. Where is the ethical line for you? You are told in your code of ethics to maintain a non-judgmental attitude. Think of a client you treated immediately following September 11th. How did you fare in upholding this ethical principle of non-judgmentalism? There are many gray areas here, and only you know what and where the line is for you. For tool number two, here are some facts about terrorist personalities and the psychology of terrorism to help your client answer the question, what type of people would do this? One of the most prominent aspects of the terrorist personality is their denial of death. The terrorist relationship with death is a controversial element of the terrorist personality. The biological instinct to survive for the individual and society is the overriding principle that fights against the acceptance of death. People most normally try to escape from death using every available means. But as you know, many terrorists have a specific attitude defined as the delusion of immortality, through which they feel they live day by day, as if death either did not exist or did not concern them. This defense mechanism is a denial of reality. Death cannot be accepted at the experiential level and must therefore be rationalized, attributed to immortality. Thus, death is made into a symbol of an exceptional event, or denied and lived simply as a religious transition from life on earth to eternal life. The only condition under which this attitude towards death is drastically changed, and the survival instinct appears not to operate, is in war and acts of terrorism. War and terrorism permit the rule of death over life and the legitimization of terror. The normal terrorist is therefore like a soldier outside of time and space, living in a reality of their own making. Here is some additional information you might use to move your clients from why questions of grief to how questions. I found by defining terrorism for my 32-year-old client, Nancy, and reframing it into the following terms, she was assisted in putting events into perspective. I referred to Bell's six categories of terrorism, which are psychotic, criminal, vigilante, endemic, authorized, and revolutionary. Here's the information I gave Nancy. Since Nancy had a very analytical personality, she was very comfortable with having clear-cut definitions and being provided with these facts. Perhaps you might find them helpful. The purpose of psychotic terrorism is psychological gratification. However, the purpose of criminal, vigilante terrorism are profit and retaliation, respectively. Endemic terrorism, such as the Al-Qaeda attacks on the Twin Towers, the purpose might be considered a resolution of an internal struggle between an interpretation of religious convictions and politics. Authorized terrorism would occur when a state of repression exists. And finally, revolutionary terrorism, which most notably occurred in the United States by black militant groups to effect behavioral change. In assisting your client to actualize or realize the losses caused by terrorist acts immediately after they happen, and to help them make sense of the events, and making their unreal feelings more grounded, let's look at terrorist rationalizations. One of my colleagues stated the following in a session with a client following September 11th. This seemed to increase the client's acceptance of the facts. Here's the gist of what was said. The terrorist's reasons for his actions must make a difference in the world or to him personally. And here the proponents of terror say one of two things. First, they say they must sometimes fight fire with fire, a slogan designed to show that violence is the only means to a worthy or a necessary end. Second, terrorists state that systematic repression prevents legitimate points of view from being heard. Thus, terrorists feel violence is the only remaining way to express their beliefs. Here are three rationalizations terrorists use. As I explain these three specific rationalizations, evaluate if they would be of assistance to your clients experiencing loss, grief, anxiety, or depression due to terrorist acts, who are asking why or how. Terrorist rationalization number one is fight fire with fire. If the fighting fire with fire principle applies, the culture of terrorism dictates that they must have good reason to believe either that worse things will happen unless they attack, or that a more than offsetting good will be brought about, and can only be brought about by terrorist acts. Terrorism seldom talks about the exact eventual good that will occur. Their future extends only to the destruction of present institutions. The idea is to kill in the name of violence, for which no specific explanation is given. Thus, lack of a specific explanation may have resulted in an exacerbation of symptoms for your clients diagnosed with a generalized anxiety disorder, for example. Terrorist rationalization number two is evidenced by the terrorist validity or efficacy. Several clients have asked, and perhaps you have heard this question too in a session, by what twisted reasoning can it be supposed that exploitation and loss of life will succeed in stating a message about exploitation and loss of life? This nonsensical, paradoxical philosophy has created much unresolved tension for many clients, I'm sure. However, as you know, the key is to help the client identify and express his or her conflicting feelings of anger, guilt, anxiety, helplessness, and so on. My colleague stated to a client, "I know this doesn't make sense, but this is the terrorist rationale to make their actions appear valid." If you have a military person as your client, this brings up the ethical question of legitimate use of violence versus illegitimate use of violence. The third terrorist rationalization is one that states the person who will die is not innocent. This dehumanizes the victim. In the terrorist culture, it's argued that no one is innocent, therefore the terrorist is not guilty. This argument shifts the grounds of acting from the reasons for acting to the context in which the terrorist attacks take place. But what can that mean? The premise then applied to practical affairs converts killers into agents of divine retribution. One might suppose that the loss of the status of being innocent means only that a state of total war exists. So terrorists are at war with everyone, fighting for its demise through tactics imposed on them by their interpretation of the logic of the situation. Thus, we have discussed three rationales that terrorists use to legitimize their action. 1. Fight fire with fire. 2. The validity of their ideas. 3. The idea that no person is totally innocent. After September 11th, many clients experienced the fear of imminent destruction, which was accompanied by a sense of powerlessness and an unpredictable future. Many experienced all four of the basic threats that induce the stress response, that is, threat to life, threat to bodily injury, threat to security, and threat to self-image. According to Ochberg, the consensus among laboratory and field researchers is that appraisal of a situation as one or more of these kinds of threats brings about a stress reaction that has physical and psychological components. Response to the threat results in your client's creation of coping mechanisms, as you know. Your client may have exhibited coping styles which included psychosomatic disorders, immobility or a fear to leave their home, channeled activities via hyperactivity, stereotyping, scapegoating, regression, and an increased capacity for an orientation towards intimate relationships. After the September 11th terrorist attacks, the reported filing for divorces showed a marked decrease, as you are aware. Question number 3. What attitude can you explain to your client that the terrorists use through which they feel they live day by day, as if death either did not exist or did not concern them?